And welcome to another episode of Talking Aerospace Today from Siemens Digital Industry Software. I'm Patty Russo. I'm responsible for global marketing for aerospace and defense vertical here at Siemens. Thank you for joining our conversation. In our previous episode, we covered the final stage of digital transformation maturity. This references a five-step framework that can be used to assess where engineering and manufacturing companies across our industry and others are in the process of advancing their digital transformation technology and processes, and it helps to identify where they need to go to achieve business goals. Before we introduce today's topic and guests, let's do a brief recap of our coverage of this topic. Our conversations about digital transformation maturity began in July of 2023, and we covered the drivers for companies in the A&D industry that require them to go beyond where they currently are in the adoption of digital transformation technologies. We explored the advanced stages of the framework, including automation, generative design, and closed-loop optimization. We also discussed the role AI will play in that journey. Today, we want to look forward to what an aerospace industry transformed by AI might look like in the future. Joining us, as always, is our VP of A&D here at Siemens Digital Industry Software, Todd Tuttle. Welcome, Todd.
Hey, Patty, great to be here. Good to talk to you all today. Can't wait for this interesting, exciting topic.
Likewise, and we have a special guest today, Barclay Brown, Associate Director for AI Research for Collins Aerospace. Barclay is also the leader for AI Systems Working Group at ENCOSI. Welcome to you, Barclay.
Hey, Patty, thanks for having me, and hey, good to see you again, Todd.
Yeah, good to see you. And if I could say, Barclay, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us. For our listeners, Barclay is certainly an expert in the industry in aerospace, in MBSE, and in AI. So he's just the perfect person to join us today. So Barclay, I really appreciate having you on the podcast today.
Yeah, I'm also looking forward to the conversation and excited to be a part of it. So let's get started. Todd, you have made a few bold statements in the recent past about the future of AI for aerospace. Wondering if you could please reiterate a couple of those statements and maybe share a little bit about why you see AI being so important for the aerospace industry.
Sure. Last fall, publicly, I said by 2033, 10 years from last fall, the way we design aerospace products will completely change. That change will be driven by AI. And I said by then, 2023, there'll be two types of aerospace companies, ones who've embraced AI and ones who are no longer in business. And I still stand by that statement, except I think I may want to adjust it just a bit. I'm not sure it'll take that long. And here's a couple of reasons why. If you've looked at the recent news, and just think about the market cap of NVIDIA. In October of 2022, NVIDIA's market cap was $300 billion. As of just a few days ago, early March, its market cap was $2 trillion. It's the fastest rise from $1 billion to $1 trillion to $2 trillion, I believe, of any company in history. And that's just an indication of the impact that AI is having. And of course, I went back to October of 22 on purpose because we all know ChatGPT launched in November of 2022, and that's what kind of started that big rise in NVIDIA. And I think if a lot of people in the tech community and in maybe outside the tech community would say, well, AI was invented in November of 2022 with ChatGPT. Well, no, I don't think so. AI's been around a long time. We may talk about that, but talk about the future. But as I think about the NVIDIA, as I think about things I saw at CES, all the growth in other companies outside of aerospace that, quite frankly, I think many of those companies in consumer goods and in entertainment and creative arts are actually ahead of aerospace in many cases in adoption of AI. And when I think about that, what's happening in NVIDIA, with NVIDIA, what's happening in consumer goods and other places, I think that 2033 prediction may have been too long. Maybe I need to adjust that, come back a few years. That's where it's at. And I think about that because AI is so important for aerospace. It offers so much promise in terms of helping us with all of our problems with workforce, helping us produce products faster, And of course, even making a better environment to attract new engineers. And I'm sure those are some of the topics we'll get to today in the podcast.
Yeah, bold statements for sure. Lots of interesting and dynamic changes in our industry and, of course, elsewhere. So thank you for that look back. So now let's take a look forward. Barclay, would you give us a look into your perspective on the future of product development in particular in complex low volume industries like aerospace? How will AI change the way engineers work in these industries in the 10 years maybe that Todd mentioned, or 5 years, or even 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, well, first, I completely agree with Todd that it's going to be completely different in 10 years, but it's not going to all happen in that ninth year, right? It's going to be these little steps all the way along. And I think the steps are going to be so small as to be kind of imperceptible. I mean, every once in a while, we have a big bump. You know, when ChatGPT came out, everybody was inspired. You know, it was like, oh, look what's now possible. And it was like this big jump. But now, you know, every day we're finding new ways to apply it. Every day we're trying to figure out how to apply it in sensitive industries and things like this, because ChatGPT, as you know, is a public service, right? And not something that we use inside of our company. So what do you do with that? So, but if you look way out, I want to go farther into the future than Todd's willing to go. I'm going to go several hundred years into the future. Are you ready? Right. And so this, of course, is the world of science fiction. And I'm always intrigued by how science fiction depicts engineering in the sci-fi future, right? And say Star Trek in hundreds of years in the future, right? And one thing that's interesting is there still are engineers, right? There still are people designing new products and new things, right? New ships and everything. And I'll tell you one little story from this. There's a Star Trek series called Voyager, you probably remember. And at one point, Voyager's out there in space all on its own. And they decide just in their starship to design this little new portable kind of a fighter, kind of a small ship, right? And they're going to design and build it, right there. So you watch, what does the engineering process look like that they go through to design this new little ship that they end up calling the Delta Flyer? Well, one day they walk into the holodeck. So you remember the holodeck, right? And one of the engineers says, show me the current design for the Delta Flyer. And poof, there's this holographic image of the whole ship. And they look at it and they go, shorten the wings by 0.5 meter. Poof, there's the change, right? Okay, now let's add a vertical tail fin. Whoop, there it is, right? And so they're sort of interacting with this design in a very fluid way, merging together all of the different disciplines, because as they change the wing size, that affects the characteristics. If it were flying in the atmosphere with air, right? I guess fins don't matter if you're flying in space, but you know, they're taking in, it's kind of this holistic approach. And you see the same thing with Tony Stark and Iron Man and the way he's designing the suit with Jarvis assistance and so on. So I think AI is going to be in and through all of this. And what it should do somewhere, hopefully before several hundred years, is make the work of engineers much more powerful. They'll be able to do much more work in less time, more creatively, and have more fun.
That's where I come in and say, beam me up, Scotty, right? Great analogy, Barclay. One that no doubt resonates with this audience. And what you just said, I think should hit home, hopefully hits home with those in our audience, because what you're suggesting is it will allow engineers to do the creative stuff that engineers love to do. And I'm sure some would like to be at that point right now. And for others, though, the reality of AI might be just a little hard to conceive. So what do you think, Barclay, are some of the most significant challenges in maybe not getting there 100 years from now, but getting there in the short term? Or put differently, what do you think might hold industry leaders back from embracing or adopting AI?
Well, it's definitely a challenge, but it's not a new challenge, right? This challenge comes up whenever there's a new technology, you know, and the people who invent the new technology are often naive, right? And they're saying, well, this technology is so much better than the past, everybody will just grab it and run with it, you know? But if you remember when CAD, right, computer-aided design came along years ago, right, there were still people who thought it was better and easier, and some even claimed faster to draw something using their pencil and their drafting table. Right. But eventually CAD won out because it had so many advantages. Right. But it was a process over some years. And trust is a big part of it because, you know, as these engineers, let's go back to the drafting people, right? They had to learn to trust the CAD system, you know, that it would draw it correct. If they specified it right, it would draw it right. It wouldn't introduce errors into it. And you have the same challenge right now. So the answer comes along a couple dimensions. One is just knowledge. A big part of my job right now is trying to educate people on AI. And not just at the surface level, at a deeper level. So they really understand how these things really work. And that my thought is that that will bring better intuition about what's possible and what's not possible, what we should be trying to get AI to do and what, no, we shouldn't get AI to do that. But let's just have the engineers do that. But here's what the AI could do. You know, what's the right mix and how do they work together? So you hear this buzzword of human machine teaming. You know, what's the right teaming model for AIs? And it could be more than one AI, right? And more than one people, more than one person, you know, people teaming together to do an engineering task in the best way possible. That's going to be the stuff we're going to have to really work on. And just like we don't trust an AI out of the box, guess what? We don't trust people out of the box either, do we? I mean, do you take a new engineer you've just hired, have them do something, and you just take it and use it? No. Somebody checks it. Somebody verifies it. You know, people look at it. There's reviews on everybody, right? And we're going to need to treat AIs the same way.
Yeah, and Barclay, that's a very good point, and I'd like to dive a little deeper there, because when I talk to aerospace customers, that issue of trust always comes up, and it comes up at several levels, and I'm going to ask you to dive into a couple different levels. One of those levels you just talked about is, can I trust the results? How can I trust the results? And I'm interested in that specifically around this idea of maybe a non-deterministic idea of training models. And if my model changes, what do I have to do to my AI to trust the results, especially in maybe a certified aircraft kind of thing? So that's one issue of trust. The other issue of trust I hear all the time is, well, this is my proprietary data. This is my family jewels that I protect in my company. How do I go mix that in an AI algorithm? Where is that going to go? And how do I know that I can trust that data with a piece of software that I may not fully understand what it does? So if you could address those two things for aerospace companies, that'd be great.
Let's try if I can remember the two. So let's start out with the first one. Non-determinism of systems is, I don't hear that term as much as I used to, because people are understanding, when you understand how deep neural networks work, which are the heart of AI these days, and are also the heart of things like large language models and so on, you see that all they are is massive matrices of numbers, and fairly simple calculations are done with those numbers to produce the results. So I often say, in what way is that non-deterministic? If I give it exactly the same input under exactly the same conditions, you're going to get exactly the same answer. Now, the point is, you know, as we work with something, even as you're talking to ChatGPT, you're not in the same situation each time, right? Because you've given it the prompt and it remembers and things change and stuff like that. And you can also introduce a certain amount of randomness into the response if you want to, which sometimes makes it more creative. But if you dial out all the randomness, you'll get largely the same thing. So now that said, you've probably noticed from working with ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude 3 was just announced yesterday, right? You know, that seems to is the first model to beat GPT-4 on all measures. They claim. Who knows if it's been independently verified, but by the numbers they're publishing, it seems to. So things keep moving, right? But the question of do I trust it to give me consistent answers? There's enough variability in the prompting, right? If you prompt it just a little bit differently, does it give you a little bit different answer? Well, which is right? Is it lying the first time and telling the truth the second time? No, it doesn't work that way. It's going based on your prompt and following on, right? So there's a lot of work we have to do in that to make those a little more robust so that even, for example, poor prompting doesn't lead it to give you dangerous or misleading results or something like that. All right. And the second one was, proprietary data. Yeah, of course. So that's really not an AI question, believe it or not. That turns out to be more about the infrastructure that the AI is running on. So if I go and type my proprietary secret information into ChatGPT, literally, I go to openai.com and use ChatGPT, that's crazy because there's no guaranteed security. There's been no vetting of the security of that service. Now, OpenAI says, we're not going to use your data, and I'm not saying they're lying, but there could be leaks, there may not be adequate protections and so forth. So let's go one step up. Let's, instead of going to OpenAI, we go to Azure OpenAI, which delivers the same model through Microsoft's Azure cloud platform. Now, a lot of companies use that and trust that with some levels of data. Now, can you put tech data on there, ITAR data on there? I don't know. Some companies draw that line, right? Can you put classified data on that kind of a network? No, right? So it depends on where's the system and where are we doing it. Now, one of the latest trends that's just coming up in recent weeks here is, can we run large language models on our own workstations? Because as you know, on your own workstation, you can have any level of data that you're authorized to have right on your own workstation. And if I can run the AI right here locally with some accelerator box or some AI chip that NVIDIA is going to give me in the next generation and put into my PC, I can run the whole thing right here. So that may be a trend we're going to see, and I think we will. I think PCs, in fact, I think Dell? Somebody just came out with a PC that has an AI chip in it and says, you know, here it is, built right into this laptop, and it'll do AI right here to some level on your PC.
So let's pull that hardware thread just a little bit. I talked to a company, I believe the name of the company is DellX at CES, and their claim to fame was they're going to put AI on the edge. Can you talk about where you think computing devices, edge devices, are going to go in the future? And is AI going to be everywhere in the factory, or is it going to be just in one specific spot?
Yeah, that's easy. Everywhere. It's definitely going to be everywhere. But there still will be differences. You know, like you, if you say, where's compute going to happen today? Where does compute happen? Well, it happens everywhere. Some compute happens on your own PC. Some compute happens in the cloud. You know, depending on various things. So AI is going to be the same way. It's going to be everywhere at some level. And some things you do will just happen on your own PC. If I need, you know, what GPT-8 will do in 10 years, right, or whatever, then that may need to be running on a server somewhere because it may need that kind of horsepower. One thing we still don't know is what's the functionality curve going to look like with those big models? Is it going to level off soon? Is it going to increase dramatically for years on end, you know, with multi-trillion parameter models? Or is it going to get smarter but with smaller models? You know, you're never going to be able to have the ultimate top model running locally on your PC because somebody out there will have a bigger model running on a bigger computer. But does it do more? We don't know, right? So we're still exploring what that curve is going to look like. Sam Altman recently was talking about GPT-5, right? And they haven't announced GPT-5 or anything, but they're kind of hinting about it. And he says it will be better than GPT-4. And that sounds like that's not saying much. But he says, no, it'll be better than GPT-4 at everything, at every kind of task, at understanding the questions, at reasoning, at math. It'll be better at everything. And he says, that's going to be a game changer.
Maybe we could go back to the holodeck example a little bit and pull on that thread. Because, okay, I'm sold. I'm a startup company in aerospace. I love your example, Barclay. I'm even willing to invest. Let's talk about for a few minutes the kind of technologies that need to be developed that aren't here today to get us to a holodeck in 10 years or 20 years or 25 years. What still needs to be out there?
Well, I'm giving a talk on digital engineering here at a conference here in a week or two. And one of the ideas there is I think digital engineering is going to have to be grown from the ground up. So the first thing I would say to you, Mr. Startup, right, as you're going to do this, right, is find the state of the art, and not the state of the art like on the ragged edge of maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but one level below that's solid, that works, but is advanced, and get that. Don't try to rebuild that yourself. But then figure out how to do your own engineering to integrate things, to tie things together. The holodeck example, you're referring to that. That sounds fanciful until a few weeks ago when everybody saw the demos of Sora. Have you seen this? This is OpenAI's new video generator, and it's shocking the kind of video that it can generate. So if it can generate video like that, what about generating video of the product we're building, right? And being able to see it and so forth. That's not a stretch anymore. I mean, it's like here. That's almost, I don't even have to use the holodeck anymore. I could say just like Sora, you know? The digital engineering thing, though, is about getting the best and then being willing to integrate yourself, you know, integrate a work, figure out a workflow where the CAD is going to do this and we're going to feed certain information from a large language model. It's going to go into this and figuring out that kind of weaving. That's a lot. I think what the digital engineering task is going to be is weaving these things together in ways that fit what you want to accomplish.
Thank you, Todd and Barclay, for your great insights on this topic. This really has been an interesting discussion. We are up against time, though, and this is a good place to pause. We'll pick up the second half of this conversation in our next episode. In the meantime, if you'd like to learn more about AI in engineering, Barclay has authored a book on the subject, Engineering Intelligent Systems, Systems Engineering and Design with Artificial Intelligence, Visual Modeling, and Systems Thinking. In a couple weeks, check back to catch the next episode of our podcast where we conclude this conversation. I'm Patty Russo, and as always, thank you for joining us. We look forward to having you back next time on Talking Aerospace Today.